everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Well, you just heard a promo about the show we're going to do today, which I imagine PRN has been running. And so you get a little preview. For 11 years, I co-led two women's sexuality groups, and these women had all experienced sexual abuse, sexual trauma in their past. So I know this subject, and I was delighted to find Grant Cameron and his wife, Liz. Grant's book is What About Me? A book for men helping female partners deal with childhood sexual abuse. Welcome to this program, Grant, and I'm imagining that you have Liz there with you as well.
Hello.
Hello, Liz.
Hi, Dr. Diana.
Hi, Grant.
Thanks for having us on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, I'm so happy that you're on the show. Let me tell the listeners that you are an award-winning journalist and author, and you and your wife live in Ontario, Canada. And Liz is a physical fitness trainer. I really, really like your book. It's quite unique because it's the end result of the traumatic and trying times that you encountered while trying to help your wife deal with her abusive past.
Yeah, very, very much so.
Yes, and so could you tell us a little more about why you were so driven to write the book?
Liz, who was sexually abused as a child, when it started coming out, when me and Liz got together, it caused all sorts of problems. And what happened was there was nowhere to find any information for the partner of a spouse who's being abused. And, we couldn't find anything anywhere. And, we needed something to kind of hold on to, because when we started into this whole process of healing from sexual abuse, we didn't know, what was coming, how to deal with any of it, and, that there is light at the end of the tunnel. So the whole rationale for the book is to let people know that we're going through this, that number one, there is light at the end of the tunnel, but also to give them kind of a roadmap how to get through this process. Everybody's a little different, and it takes different time lengths and that sort of thing, but basically just to give them some guidance.
And your book was originally published in 1994?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And so tell us about its publishing history and how listeners can get your book. We'll start with that, and we'll review this at the end of the program as well.
Okay, I'll give you the quick Cole's notes.
good.
Published by a print publisher, and it was a good seller for about 10 years, major bookstores, that kind of thing. And they basically finished up their business, so it ended, that sort of thing. So I had the book sitting there, and I thought, well, I might as well go ahead and do this again, because I got a lot of phone calls from people who were in dire straits, and they needed the book right away. So what I did was just basically rewrote the book, freshen it up. It was a little dated, and it's a downloadable PDF, so people can automatically, once they order the book, they'll receive a downloadable PDF, so they don't have to, go to the bookstore or wait for a mail order or that sort of thing. So that's kind of where it's at right now. And if you'd like, I can give you the site.
Yes, please give the site. And again, I'll repeat it at the end. I just wanted to interject that this is a very easy read. I read the PDF book online. And it really, Grant, well, you're a journalist, you're a writer, and it's very clear.
Yeah.
And you present everything in layman's terms, and that's good. So give the place where people can find this book.
Yeah, it's www.helpforpartners.wordpress.com. fairly lengthy URL, but
but anyway, helpforpartners.wordpress.com.
Right.
So they can find it there.
Yes.
And you know, the research shows the prevalence of child abuse is between 1 in 4 to 3 women, and of course, boys are also abused in smaller numbers.
Right.
But as the husband of a survivor,
mm-hmm.
You wrote strictly from the male point of view with a female partner going through this.
Yes, exactly.
And Liz, was it, as you went through, I suppose, writing the or helping Grant with information for the book, was it therapeutic for you in any way, the process of writing this book?
Oh, very much so, especially when we knew when we were doing this to help other people, because to be honest, when we were going through the healing process, I remember saying, like, this has to be easier. Like, thank goodness we had a therapist. Thank goodness.
Mm.
But as Grant was writing it, we would talk about each chapter, and we would say, well, make sure you put that in. That's very important, because we know anybody that's a partner, like that, someone that's helping their partner heal from sexual abuse, believe me, it's not easy. And when we were writing, well, Grant, of course, was writing the book, it was definitely therapeutic, because all I remember thinking is for, actually not just for me, is for the people that were going to help, that are going to go through the process. So.
Yes, and it really is a good roadmap. I remember from the times that I co-led these women's sexuality groups, mm-hmm. that they often reported their mostly husbands, sometimes not married partners, but just having such a difficult time. And we would occasionally bring the husbands in to the group, but not usually. Usually it was just for the women where they felt it was safe to express. Grant, I think you managed to do just a heroic job in writing this book, and I know it's helped a lot of people.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Just picking up on a point you mentioned about writing it in layman's terms,
mm-hmm.
as I mentioned in the book, it doesn't take the place of a therapist or
counselor, right.
or anything like that. It's kind of just our experience and what we went through. And I think it's a fairly common experience. And again, it's written fairly simply just because I want it to be easily understood, not complicated.
Yeah, I liked your rather conversational and thus an often intimate tone in the book. And it's when people can give back,
mm-hmm.
they go through a terrible experience, and when you can give back in an informed way and in a compassionate way, wow, it's powerful.
Yeah, I think, and Liz can talk about this, but I think it's actually part of her healing process that
mm-hmm.
that we've written this book. I say we because she had a lot of input into this.
Yeah, right.
Even though I did the actual writing. But it's therapeutic for her because she's giving something back now.
Right.
I think it's almost like the final stage of her healing that she can help other people, and do a good thing for others by having this book out there, and hopefully other people will use it as a roadmap.
And Liz,
yes.
why do you think it's so important for a woman to fully heal?
Oh, okay, anybody that's listening that's been abused would understand this.
Of course.
But anybody that's been sexually abused, that goes for male or female, knows that they will never live life to the fullest, ever. I know this because before I healed, I was always very bubbly. I always came across as a very happy person,
mm-hmm.
but the only way I can explain it, I never really felt the sand on the beach. Like I never felt the sun. I've always had an empty feeling, and I thought that was going to be my life, going through my whole life,
mm-hmm.
never being able to fulfilled. But now that when you fast forward and I've went through the healing process, now I get it. I feel the sun. When I walk down the beach with my husband on vacation and I feel the sand on my feet, it's unbelievable. That's what you get when you heal. That's why I feel for so many others out there that have been victimized, that they'll never be able to feel that fulfilled feeling. And this is what my goal is to help others get to that point to say they've healed and they can move on and live at least the second half of their life feeling that feeling that of being fulfilled, definitely.
And well, yeah, you feel more whole. I know that in the women that I've worked with over the years, not just in the groups that I co-led for, as I said at the top of the show, for 11 years, but other women who've been sexually abused, that their boundaries are violated, and it's often difficult for them in adult intimate relationship to feel safe and to let go. Yes, so you feel now that it is safe, and it must make a huge difference in your marriage to Grant.
Huge difference. I mean, I feel the only, like I mentioned before, the only way I can explain it, and this is sounds strange, but I feel like I was never abused because I healed. It's almost like it never happened. That's the only way I can explain it. It's as if I've had such a good life all my life.
Well, that is astounding.
Yes.
We spoke with a pre-interview a few days ago, and you've had to, it was necessary for you to cut off your relationship with your mother and your stepfather who abused you, and even, I guess, your siblings. So you've had a lot of loss in the midst of all of this recovery and healing.
Well, that's, again, where when we wrote the book, that was important for a lot of, you know, like people that were reading the book to understand that they may also go through that, too, because what happens is when you decide to, say, confront the perpetrator, unfortunately, in a lot of cases, the family members will stand by them, and that's what happened to me. As an example, when I went to court, my mom showed up and sat beside my stepfather. Supported him in court, and my sister's husband showed up and walked past me and sat with him. It was quite devastating because I thought, oh my gosh, here I am, you know, in court, and everybody's sitting beside him, protecting him. So,
well, it feels like a huge betrayal, I'm sure, and I know that from my clinical work with survivors, often there is the mother issue, because mother knew on some level,
yes,
and didn't believe if the girl told, the mother didn't believe her story, and so it feels like an additional abuse.
Yeah, that's more painful. Actually,
yeah.
If I think about it, like at the time, I think that's more devastating for the mother to turn her head versus the person that's abusing you. I think, honestly, if my mother would have protected me, I think I would have healed, you know, had more of a better healing process than her standing by him. Because to this day, she's still with him, even though she knows what he did. So,
and you have no relationship, and that's really sad. It's sad for everybody. But I think it's remarkable that you feel like it's never happened, even though, as we've been discussing, there are residues, of course, and there always will be.
Yeah.
Grant, let's go back to you. You have a wonderful chapter 7 in the book, The Child Within.
Yes.
Let's talk about The Child Within.
Very complicated subject.
Yes, it is.
I guess the easiest way I can describe it, Liz may have another way of describing it, but it's almost like a, not a separate person, but a kind of a conscience is probably the right word. And it's this, what's been described to me by the, you know, the counselors and everything, it's almost like the child that never grew up, and it's the child that was abused and that sort of thing. And it's a very real thing. And when I first heard about this, when Liz and I were both attending counseling, you know, it was a little deep for me. I just didn't know what this was about. But as we got deeper into the healing, I realized that it's a very real thing. And To make a long story short, this child within has to be treated properly, and it has needs and desires that have to be taken care of, and it's basically a child's conscious that's trying to heal. And basically, when that child within heals is when the adult survivor becomes one again. That's about as easy as I can explain it. I don't know if Liz can describe it any differently, or
I think I can. I can give you an example, Dr. Diana.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you.
Just an example, when we were dating, Grant and I went to the mall, and we go into a music store back then. Now we're starting to show our age here. They sold the tapes, right? So
yeah.
I said to him, I want this 70s disco tape. And he says to me, what do you want to buy that for? I said, no, I really have to have this tape.
The disco tape.
Yeah, it was a disco tape.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, we get in this huge argument in the middle of the store. And I stomped out, and, I wouldn't talk to him for the whole night. So we go to the therapist on the Monday, because at the time, we're still seeing the therapist. Mm-hmm. Little did I know this might sound crazy to a lot of the listeners, but what happened was, when I was young and being abused, the 70s music used to play in the background. And I guess it used to soothe my mind. Because
and it helped you disassociate, too, so that you didn't really have to be present.
Yeah, so it was almost like the child wanted that. I didn't understand why I was having a temper tantrum. Because, and he's like, why do you want 70s music? Do you know how much 70s music he had to put up with through the healing process?
I thought this was all about the disco tape.
Yeah, it was like...
And it had
nothing
to do with the tape. It had to do with, this was something that the child within needed.
Yeah. And
right.
So basically, when we left, when we went to see a therapist that week, when we left, we go, now it makes more sense. And he went and bought me a disco tape actually that week and apologized, right? But that was just an example of the little things like I started to do for the child within. I would like buy myself once a week things that would nurture the child, like the disco music and stuff. And it was almost like I felt this happiness. It was like I had a little daughter in me that I was saying, okay, I'm going to go buy you something this week. And if I honestly, we laugh about it now but at the time it wasn't funny, believe me, the fights we used to get into, because of me having these little temper tantrums. So.
Well, it was almost like finding things that would nurture you and soothe you. It was almost like you were having to reparent yourself.
Yes.
Because you were neglected, and your mother just, for whatever reasons, and they're often, when mothers don't acknowledge the child's sexual abuse or won't confront the perpetrator, it's often selfish, and it's often fear. That, sometimes financial, what will they do without the financial support of the husband? But it's kind of sick. It's not good parenting.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it when her mother didn't support her and do the right thing. I couldn't believe it. And when we went through the court process, taking a step farther to court and that sort of thing, I found it unbelievable that she could sit in court and, listen to her daughter tell these stories and support the stepfather. It blew my mind. Couldn't get over that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Yes, it is, especially if you come out of a family that's nurturing and where you feel more securely attached to mother.
Yeah.
And to see a mother. So your mother may have had, Liz, your mother may have had some real dysfunction in her family of origin, and maybe she was even abused. I do find that this sometimes happens.
Oh, you're so right. And I think she felt very unloved by her parents.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always seen her like as a very self-absorbed woman. She was always scared to go on her own, like you know the financial part. Even though he didn't really have a lot of money, like the best he could do is put food on the table. Mm-hmm. But she always, I think, she was a very self-absorbed woman. I can tell you that. And so basically, she had a very coldness about her, and I think it had a lot to do with her upbringing. Definitely, you're right there.
Sure. Well, some people become pretty self-absorbed because that's a way to survive.
Definitely.
You know, if nobody else is going to take care of them, they're going to take care of themselves. Mm. And then, some other things can happen, but we don't need to go off on a track like that now. I sound too much like the psychotherapist. And, of course, I am, and it informs my questions and our interview today.
So I
want to talk to you about your sexual relationship. You have a very good chapter, Grant, chapter 16. I know that the effects of childhood abuse on women's sexuality can be devastating. Now, I've seen these victims experience sexual dysfunction, including vaginismus, which is where the opening of the vagina contracts so much that penetration isn't even possible. So that's like the body's way of saying, I'm not letting anything else in here.
Right, I see.
And then there are typically orgasmic difficulties. It's because orgasm is about being in the moment, letting go, surrendering, all of those things that are often very difficult for a woman who's had her boundaries so compromised.
Right.
And then impaired sexual motivation, and an arousal that gets interrupted by a number of stress reactions. But in your book, you talk about making, in terms of your sexual relations, making a plan. And just talk a little bit more, Grant, first, and then we'll get Liz into the conversation.
We never experienced some of the problems you mentioned there. I didn't even.
Yeah, that's good.
Problems existed, but
I'm
glad we didn't. But
yeah.
We did have some problems. I think the biggest problem was Liz had to be in control, which is, you know, I'll be honest with you. I'm a guy. We like to be in control. when it came down to intimacy and that sort of thing, it was kind of on her terms because, you know, by the time we reached that level, we'd already been, you know, dealing with therapists and that sort of thing. So I understood what was going on. But, you know, trust was a real tough thing for her. And even using the word like commitment and that sort of thing, that she was committed to me was a very tough thing. But when it came to like sexual relations, it sounds kind of clinical, but basically she pulled the strings. You know, there were different ways of doing it. She didn't say, I'm ready for sexual relations right now or anything like that. But, you know, she might say, why don't we go to bed early tonight or why don't we just watch a movie and, sit on the couch or something like that. So there'd be some kind of signal that it was okay. And then it would be fine to approach her. But, she was very kind of standoffish. If you wanted to approach her, you had to kind of make sure that she was okay with it. And there were a few times where, you know, we were just kind of getting in the mood, shall we say, and she just kind of got turned off because probably some flashback or something was going through her head, and she just didn't want to do that. So, you just have to back off. But, it was, I guess trust was the biggest thing. And, you know, after a while, you know, once she started healing, those problems went away, and everything is, as far as I know, normal right now. So we're a normal married couple.
That is good to hear. I understand the dynamic, and it's very typical of a woman who's had sexual abuse in her background to feel the need for control, because she felt so out of control when she was being abused and molested.
Yes.
Liz, can you speak to that a bit?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Grant said exactly. I don't know. Sometimes I wonder how he put up with me. He was so patient with me. Like when you're being intimate and then you just say, you say to the, you know, your partner, stop, you don't do that. You know, he was great. He would just say, okay, that's no problem, and just maybe lay there and talk to me. That was the toughest part, because then you think, oh, God, like, how do I tell him, like, no, stop it, right? Because when you're going through the healing process, again, you, that's all you're thinking about is your past, all your abuse. It's like a movie, right?
Right.
And that was a challenge.
Again.
Yeah, it was quite a challenge. And I think what helped helped me a lot when Grant would be so patient about that, I will say that for sure. He's such a gentleman in that sense, where he didn't get mad and say, fine, you know, I won't touch you again. You know, instead he would just say, you know, are you okay? That to me, I've always remembered that, for him doing that with me and putting me first and saying, you know what, he understood. Because I know a lot of cases men wouldn't, you know, like, you know, and I understand that, because they're wanting to be intimate with their partner and everything's fine, and then the person says, stop, you know, don't do that. So Grant explained it perfectly. He's right. I did have to have a lot of the control at that time, for sure.
I think what helped a lot, too, was the fact that we were seeing a counselor, so we knew kind of what was going on.
Definitely.
So,
mm-hmm.
It wasn't a case of... you know, we're kind of floundering, and this is the way it was. It was, we knew it was something that we would run up against, and the counselor helped us through that. So
yeah, that we'll come back to the sexuality.
Sure.
But I do want to talk a little bit about the therapy before we take a break in about 4 minutes. Although I just wanted to observe something that I suspect is quite true, and that is, Liz, because Grant was this gem of a husband and so patient, your love for him must have deepened.
Oh, I mean, like I mentioned to you when we had the pre-interview, you know, I'll be with him probably forever, because, you know, he went through a lot with me, and he did it with me together.
Mm-hmm.
He stuck by me, and there were times, believe me, I don't know why he didn't just pack up and leave, because, I used to have the temper tantrums and a lot of issues, a lot of mood swings, and we both pulled through, but I'll be honest with you, if I would have kept doing it, he probably would have finally said, I can't do this anymore, because the reason I decided to get the help was because I was breaking off with him yet again for the fifth time, and he had enough.
Yes.
He had enough, because he said to me, you know what, you either get help or it's over.
Yeah.
He got tired of being on the roller coaster with me. Every other week, I would break off with him.
He gave you an ultimatum, and
the timing
was right for that.
And he wasn't kidding. You know how some guys would say that? Because he wasn't kidding. He said,
right.
I love you, but I can't do this anymore. Because I was basically telling him every 2-3 weeks, get out, I don't want to see you again, and then he'd come back, and then every 2-3 weeks, and then finally I exhausted him.
Mm-hmm.
And he meant that. He goes, if you're willing to get help, we'll do this together. If you're not, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Grant, that must have taken some courage to say.
Very much so. At times your head would be spinning. You'd be going full guns for 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden she'd be saying, that's it, we're done.
Yeah.
It was a tough period, but, you know, you have to look after yourself as well, and, you know, you can only take so much, so, eventually you get to a point where if the person's, you know, not willing to get help, you can't help them. You can only, you know, give them the opportunity, and, but if they're not willing to take that final step, then, you know, you can't. Push him to do it. So, but luckily it worked out, and it was a close call, because I remember the weekend that we had finished up, and she called me and she said, "I'm ready to get help." So, it was almost like the olive branch was was just extended far enough, and I grabbed on, and I said, okay, we'll get you into some counseling, and away we went. So
the old adage, timing is everything. So exactly. The timing was right.
I think so. A lot of luck, yeah.
Luck, and you'd also both suffered in your own respective ways enough.
Yes, yes.
So, listeners, we're going to go to our break, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking to Grant Cameron and his wife, Liz, and Grant's book is What About Me? And we'll be right back with more. So stay with us.
Nel labirinto di un amaro autore.
Mai tuoi piedi cambia per età. Mai tuoi piedi cambia per età. Happy feet. Happy
feet. We're back. This is your host, Dr. Diana Wiley, here with Grant Cameron and his wife, Liz. And Grant has written this wonderful book, so helpful, What About Me? And the only book written by a partner of a survivor. I wanted to just reflect a little bit on what some of my clients have said about their adult capacity for sexual pleasure after abuse. And here's a quote from one: I allowed myself to be manipulated by men for years, and I faked all the time. Another woman said, I was very secretive about it because I blame myself. Then I told my mother, and she denied it, shouted at me, and the guilt worsened. And another woman said, sex is something I feel very guilty about enjoying. And another, men cannot be trusted. I feel so ashamed and blamed. This is a big deal. When a woman has had her boundaries violated, it's very difficult for many to be in a relationship, to feel safe, and to let go. And for some, there's just no point in sexual self-assertion. This turned out not to be true for Grant and Liz. And how wonderful that with the therapy that you got, with communicating and with writing the book, that you avoided a lot of these really tragic kinds of emotional and physical, physical outcomes.
Yeah, as we mentioned in the first segment, things weren't too bad in that department. We had our times where, Liz trusting me was very difficult for her, and she mm-hmm. had control, sexual relations more or less on her terms. But just as an aside, what was a problem, though, was in the early days was commitment. I remember when we were just starting to see each other, we were going to be exclusive to one another. And I remember asking her, are we committed to each other? And she wouldn't use that word. And I think that goes to the trust factor, because if she said the word commitment, then, she's giving it up and she's opening the door for anything. But seemed it was a real issue with that word commitment, and that seemed to be the bigger problem. But as for the sexual relations part, things were generally okay, just the fact that she had to call the shots most of the time, and I just had to learn to live with most of that.
Yes, and has it become... Since Liz, you're feeling more healed now, has your relationship, your sexual relationship with Grant, has it become a little more egalitarian, that is to say, a little more equal give and take? Have you been able to relinquish some of the control?
Yes and no. I still,
okay. Nice.
Yes,
nice,
know, I'm
honest
not gonna lie.
Answer.
If I would say yes, I just no control. I think that's just going to be me for the rest of my life. But but in a way of not as much though. I'd say I'm like 40% compared to 100% of control now.
Okay.
Big difference.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All the things you mentioned that you said about the woman about, you know, what they feel when having intimacy with a partner, I can tell you right now they haven't healed because that's what bothers me the most is because so many women and men, that goes for men too, because I feel men that have been abused also go through the same, have to go through this stages of healing. Just as a woman does.
Well, and sometimes it can be worse because a lot of times men were abused by another man, maybe a soccer coach or somebody like that. And there, if this man is heterosexual, there's often shame. Maybe I'm really gay and I don't know it. Or maybe I brought this on myself. And the fact that then because it's man to boy, it's even more secretive and awful. So sometimes men have an even more difficult time. It's hard to measure these things, but...
Sure. They have to go through kind of stages also to heal, you know, maybe in a different sense. But just as for Grant and I know we had to go through all these different stages. And I believe in my heart that there's so many people that are going around, like going through their life even right now that don't feel they'll ever be able to heal. I guess it's because they don't have the tools. I think that's the big part. If you have the right tools to heal, then you have a chance of it happening. I don't want to say quicker, but what I'm saying is if I would have had like a book like this, for example, to read when we healed, I probably would have understood it a bit more. But,
yeah, I think what I know after 30 years of being in practice that women and men who've experienced sexual abuse almost always need some sort of professional help.
Yeah.
Whether that's a good therapist who knows what he or she is doing in this realm, has some experience with it, or I think it would be better, you know, the therapy along with a book like yours, Grant.
Exactly. Yeah. As I mentioned at the beginning, it's the book's more like just a roadmap.
Mm-hmm.
The therapist gets into the nitty gritty of the hows and whys and that sort of thing. So it's just to kind of lay out the picture of what's going to happen and what to expect and that sort of thing. Whereas nothing can take the place of a good therapist because you know they're trained and they're experienced and they know what they're up against. So If anybody's listening to this show and they're looking for help, the first place I would go would be to a therapist or a counselor and, you know, seek their help first.
There's a website called AASECT.com, and that is AASECT, and it stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Teachers. Now, this is going to help people in the United States more than in Canada, but what they have on this website are sex therapists and their specialties, state by state, city by city. And because you want to find somebody who's skilled in this area. I mean, that's just essential. And I think group work is very powerful. And back when I co-led these groups, these two women's sexuality groups, groups were more common, not just about sexual abuse, but, lack of orgasm. And by the way, most of these women also were not achieving orgasm. But group work can be very powerful because you realize you're not alone.
Groups are great. I was in a group, and I remember I went away to Cuba and came back, and I bought them all the girls a little keychain.
Uh-huh.
Years later, I actually bumped into a girl, and she still had that little chain thing on her.
Oh.
But, groups are great. You're right. It makes you feel like you're not alone. But, oh, my gosh, there's others that have been through the same thing.
Well, and then the other thing is that some of the group members are a little further ahead in their healing. And so when one person is working in the group, another person can work, too. I put work in quotes because you can identify with the other person.
Yeah, definitely. I was actually, funny enough, a little ahead of the group. I think I mentioned to you on our pre-interview that I think here's how I can only explain it. When you're going to heal, you have to heal as if you're going to school. You want to get an A+. You want to, that's 100% of your focus. And I believe strongly that if you do it, if you really focus on the healing and you say, I'm going to heal, it makes a big difference compared to I can't heal or, you know, nothing's going to help me. My attitude was, I'm going to heal from the pain of my family and my stepfather. And I actually did. I guess I was determined to move on with my life. And I did.
Well, I kudos to you. That's wonderful. And indeed, we move toward what we visualize. So if you could visualize a more whole Liz who wouldn't be constantly reactive to the abuse you had in your past, then of course you're going to be a happier woman, happier for yourself and happier for your husband.
Yeah, Liz was totally focused on her healing. You know, not the word possessed, but driven is maybe a better word. Yeah, she just made sure that we attended her counseling sessions once a week, and you know, she questioned everything that was dealt with and said in the meetings, and she read books and everything else, and she was totally focused on her healing. And I guess while I'm on that topic, something just popped into my mind. Was,
yes,
Liz could probably talk about this, but it helped her, I think, tremendously by getting rid of basically her family.
Ah, yes.
Didn't support her. They were just a terrible hindrance to her healing, and they would just continually, you know, claw back whatever progress she'd made. And the day she decided to let them go, basically, was the day that she really took strides forward. And over the years, she's, you know, made attempts to establish relationships with her sister and that sort of thing. But it never really worked out in the end. And that's, I think, what really helped her healing more than anything is the fact that she got rid of the people that weren't supporting her anymore.
You know, there's a thing that happens to people that come out of very dysfunctional families where they grow up and, to use a rather scatological metaphor, you know, the room may smell like shit, but they're familiar with the smell.
It's so true. Oh, my
God. Yeah, I mean, you know, and so then what happens to some women... that they can't trust men, and they may put up with a poor relationship. You know, women don't expect very, some women don't expect very much, and so she may fail to seek out partners who are loving and dependable, since, you know, all men are the same. And she may, in fact, have her beliefs confirmed when her partner's behavior proves she was right not to trust him. Liz, you got really lucky in choosing Grant.
Well, you know, you get women that you hear them say stuff like, I'm attracted to the, what do you call it, the bad guy, or...
Yeah.
I when they say that, I understand. They don't want to be treated good. We all want a guy with backbone. Now, Grant was smart. He's a nice guy, but he's got backbone. So, in other words, he'll put up with so much, and that's what I attracted to him, that he did have some backbone. Because if he would have kept putting it up with me, I would have probably just got rid of him and moved on. But when he said to me, you have a choice, I'm like, whoa, okay, you know. I admire him for that, because he was, you know, I could have just moved on, he moved on, but...
I was attracted to, I could see the goodness in her.
Nice, very nice. Talk more about that.
Yeah, there was something you could just see. It was a good person. You know, there were bad elements there because of the abuse, and once I understood that, I kind of twigged as to why. But, you know, she had a good heart, and, you know, she was a caring person deep down. And today, it's having the bad is gone and the good is left. And all you've got now is the good person that you knew was there all along. And it was the right call, I guess.
Well, you both got to be very lucky, very fortunate.
Yeah, yeah.
And that you hung in there and worked through it, that you somehow could see that there was some value in doing that so that you could emerge on the other side. I think some of the best marriages kind of have that knowing that no matter what comes up, they trust that they can get through it.
Yeah, yeah. After, you know, being through the healing process, it's got to be one of the most difficult things to go through. And, you know, I think whatever life throws at us now can't be as difficult as going through that. So, you know.
So the whole thing, the whole healing process was totally worth it.
Very much so.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
At the time, I didn't think it was. I regretted going through it. I used to say, why didn't I just keep my mouth shut? And it was so painful that I thought, this is not worth it. And then, you know, as time went by, it got easier and got easier. Mm-hmm. But it's like anything when you focus on, it depends on what it is. I think now, thank goodness I did it. Because I believe there's a lot of marriages that fail, 15, 20-year marriages that fail because a lot of times they did not do the healing, so sometimes it affects them even years later in their marriage.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And in your book, Grant, you have a chapter where you discuss suicidal thoughts.
Yes, yes.
And I guess you, what do you call that, the taboo?
The hidden taboo, I think.
The hidden taboo, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something people just don't want to talk about, and it's embarrassing and that sort of thing. And Liz never attempted suicide or anything like that, but she had suicidal thoughts, and that's the case where, you know, there's just so much despair. The future looks so bleak, and when you're the partner of somebody who's telling you that's how they feel, you know, you start to get panicky, and, you know, you don't know what to think. So I remember calling the hospital, and luckily they put me in touch with one of the doctors there.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically explained what was happening. Liz was going through a crisis stage.
Yes.
And just to, you know, obviously keep an eye on her and talk to her and that sort of thing, but that it will pass, and that it's actually a normal part of the healing process. So luckily maybe luck came into play here, but I talked to somebody who knew a lot about that subject, and just kind of said just to keep an eye on her, and she'll get through it. You know, from the reading and talking to people that I've done, obviously if somebody, you know, exhibits signs of suicide, then you should get them help right away. But a lot of times people will also just feel helpless, and that's why they just want to verbalize how they feel.
It's a call for help.
Exactly.
And you mentioned that in your book, and you also say, take it seriously, and that's part of my training too. When I see somebody who has some suicidal ideation, mostly I don't see that now because I work with couples who have sexual problems. But years ago, I worked more with people who were really clinically depressed.
Right.
So we had the training to what to do if there's any suicide ideation, like do they have a plan and take it seriously and have a number for them to call either the therapist or the doctors and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, one thing you probably know more about this than I do, but somebody had told me to get them to kind of enter a pact with you before they do anything, they talk to you.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Formed a bond so that they won't do anything without talking to you, basically. And somebody had mentioned that to me. I can't remember if it was a therapist or a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But that sounded like a good idea because, you know, there's trust involved there. And you know, I just think it's a good thing.
You two have been through a lot together. And one thing we haven't discussed so far is the anger. It's related to the suicide ideation. But how did you, Liz, deal with your anger? And how did you, Grant, deal with your anger? Let's take it one by one. Liz, you go first.
Okay, well, unfortunately, before the healing process, I used to try to physically hit Grant, throw stuff at him.
Oh, you were a handful.
Yeah, I used to use verbally, I used quite ghetto words, believe me. And then as I was healing, my therapist told me, if I ever find out you ever hit Grant, you're not going to be able to see me again. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's what she told
me. I like that therapist put such clear limits because your boundaries, Liz, had been so violated when you were a kid. You needed structure and boundaries like that therapist offered for you.
Well, I felt for Grant, I can imagine how frustrating it was for him to not, he's the type of man, he would never hit a woman, and thank goodness I picked that kind of guy because I test him to the limits. So as I was going through the healing, which was awesome, I got involved in martial arts. And when I used to, the basics across the floor, I used to throw punches thinking of my stepfather. I think that had a lot to do with my healing, believe me.
That's known to be a helpful intervention. So good that you did that.
Yeah, I went. I got my black belt. I used to teach. I even taught it. I just could not believe how much it helped releasing. Now, it doesn't have to be martial arts. It could be aerobics. You know, whatever. But I remember when I'd go punching across the floor and doing our basics, I'd be thinking of my stepfather's face. And all of a sudden, I was releasing this. All of a sudden, as I was healing, after my therapist said it, about don't ever hit him or, that's it, I never hit him after that. I never got violent. It's funny now because the only thing I find odd is I find myself too mellow almost now. It's like, let's sit down and talk. It's over. It's like there's anger. There's no anger. Sometimes I find that a little annoying. I want to kind of be angry, but it's not there anymore. It's so weird.
But ultimately, it's more. Sometimes releasing of anger can be so satisfying. But
But
you can see the bigger picture that for your relationship, it's going to be very important that you contain your anger, that you talk it through. But also women. Who take martial arts and who do some of these things, it really helps to empower them.
It does. It did for me. I'll tell you that much. It really did. And like I said, women or men that are healing from sexual abuse need to release somehow.
Yes,
they do. You're doing a lot of thinking through the healing. You have to remember that's all you're doing is thinking. Even if it's walking, hiking, whatever, you need to release. Definitely.
Well, and of course, exercise we know is very important to keep depression at bay, too. So,
Yeah.
Grant, do you want to talk about how you dealt with your anger?
Very, very much the same. I'm into sports, so, I'd be releasing kind of generally, going for runs, that sort of thing. But when things got too heated, basically, I just leave. I can get steamed with the best of them, and I can't pretend that I didn't get angry sometimes when she was, being verbally abusive. But the best thing to do is just leave. And, sometimes I just go sit in the car and down by the river or something like that and then come back an hour or two later and see if, the coast was clear. And afterwards, it was important to talk and, try to figure out what the real problem was and get to the bottom of it. But, I did all the usual things like, running, soccer. I do martial arts as well. So,
good.
I think sports activities and fitness activities are just a great way to keep the levels down even when things are going okay,
Your book, you told me in the pre-interview, even helped an NFL hockey player.
Yes.
And so your book has far-reaching help and all kinds of people. Sexual abuse goes across the board in terms of socioeconomic, and no one race has a corner on it. It happens everywhere.
Yes.
And I do thank you, both of you, for being my guests today. We have to stop pretty soon here because a couple minutes before the top of the hour. You've been wonderful guests, and I want to tell our listeners that you need to go to the website helpforpartners.wordpress.com, and there you can find the website, What About Me, his book, A Book for Men Helping Female Partners Deal with Childhood Sexual Abuse. It's a wonderful book. It's a helpful book. And it's really good also, not just for the man dealing with a female who's experienced it, but for the survivor to read. And then she may have more compassion for her partner and what he's going through. Don't you think?
I think so, yeah. I'd just like to say thank you so much for having us on. I think this is a really important subject, and I'm hoping your listeners get something out of this, because it is a fairly major issue in society, and I think shows like this are really a real benefit to people. So,
well, I do thank you again, and Grant and Liz, you are just wonderful people. I can tell. I hope to be able to meet you one day.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye bye, everybody. Tune in next week to Love, Lust, and Laughter. I have a very provocative guest next week.